Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Cathode Ray Mission. I'm your host, Adam Ferrance, and tonight our topic of discussion is Carlo, the miniseries by Oliver Sykes about the, well, criminal, terrorist, mercenary, what have you. I'm sure he doesn't like being called any of those things. He likes to call himself a freedom fighter, whatever. Carlos the Jackal. We are going to be looking at this tonight. It was originally a miniseries on European and domestic television. There is a movie cut that is about 2.5 hours long, but the true cut, the miniseries, is nearly 6 hours. Joining us tonight are Aaron White. Say hello.
Hello.
Perry Seibert, say hello.
Hello, I'm also a revolutionary Marxist because my favorite is Zeppo.
The one we never hear from. And hopefully joining us will be Hugh Kenneth David, but he has not called in yet, so we'll see what happens with Hugh. Anyway, we will continue, and we will start off by the question that we always start with, and that is, how did we first come to this? So I will go with you, Perry. How did we first come to this?
So I first came to the Essayist series. It came out one of the first years that I was working as a professional critic at the Detroit Film Critics Society. And it was one of the first years that I got award screeners. So I actually got to watch the full 6-hour one the first time I saw it. And it was, I'm pretty sure, actually, this is shameful, Essayist, I'm spotty with. I think it was the first Essayist work I saw. So I came to this very fresh with only my great childhood memories of the Carlos the Jackal episode of In Search Of, which had stuck with me since I was a kid. So I was looking forward to this, and it didn't disappoint.
Yeah, I think for me, I had heard about this. I knew what it was about, but I too had not seen. Maybe I'd seen. When did Clouds of Silver Marias come out? Was that 2013, 2014?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so this would have been my second, because I saw that, and then I saw this. I saw this, 2015, 2016. And I was blown away, especially that second episode, for all the flaws this thing does have, and it does have a few. That second episode, particularly that first hour and a quarter, that is some really intense, almost perfect filmmaking. So, and that really impressed me. But what about you, Aaron? How did you come to this?
So when this came out in 2010, one of my best friends saw it. I'm not entirely sure how he saw it so early, but he did. And he basically pestered me for like 3 years. When I was in grad school, and all you do in grad school when you're studying English is watch TV so that you can think about your thesis in the back of your mind.
Yes. What did you do?
Or read books.
Or go to movies.
Let's not dissuade people. Streaming. And so I texted him. I'm like, all right, I'm watching it. And was just totally blown away from my first which is kind of...
Are you still there?
Can you hear me?
yeah, yeah. Your sound was bouncing away.
So like it's kind of herring about. He makes these really like small art house into this like epic kitchen quilter. Really interesting.
Aaron, are you still there?
I'm still here.
There's Aaron.
Okay, yeah. No, we're having really bad sound issues tonight, folks, so bear with us. So now, because usually I usually like to split up one question goes to one person, one question goes to the next person, one question goes to the next person, then I try to give everybody a chance to start a question and without having the same person speak twice in a row. So, but without Hugh here, that makes it a little difficult. So what I'm gonna do now is this a triumph of writing, acting, directing, or production, Aaron?
What's my answer when something really clicks? When it's a triumph of everything, it's a triumph of direction. This is a television program, which is usually a writer's medium, but this is also a film, very much so. More than anything else probably ever, this blurs the line between cinema and television, as it literally debuted the same day at Cannes as it did on Studio Canal Plus, with the same cut. So really, like, Olivier Assayas is really riding the line here as far as the medium of this piece. And it just all comes together. And he's the writer also, so that also plays into it. But his team was clicking on all cylinders. He wrote a gem and he directed the heck out of it.
yeah, quite. So what about you, Perry? What do you think this is mostly a triumph of?
If you'll allow me to agree with Aaron that they're all great, I'm going to rank them like this. I'm going to go production. I'm going to put acting just ahead of direction and then writing. And they're all great. But my argument is this. I guess this blurs the line, but for me, I've never seen the 165-minute version of it. I've watched the six-hour version twice. So I have no idea what that looks like. And for me, the six-hour version it's brilliant. I'm glad it's 6 hours. I'd kind of like to see the 165-minute version. I think there's stuff you could take out of this. And, I'd be sad to see it go, but I don't know that it would make it a worse experience overall. You know, it all depends on what he's going for. And I say production because it does still, and maybe it's because I've only ever seen it on TV. I've never seen it, you know, on a big screen projected. It does feel like television. Like, all the best scenes are indoors. Like, it's edited like a film. I don't mean to imply it's not cinematic. I just mean it does not visual scope when I think about it. It's all confined indoor spaces. Even the best sequences in the whole movie, which are, as you were saying, the OPEC raid and then the fallout of that on the plane. I'm like, okay, that's a really easy set to shoot on, which is why I triumph of production, because it does feel sweeping without feeling like it's, you know, big to me. And that's I think that's really savvy production.
Well, we can get the next question. And that is this. What are the themes in this thing?
Who are you asking?
I said Harry. Harry, what are the themes?
Sorry,
the
themes are... So I like the saying that there's two types of stories in which there's no arc, that it's just leitmotif. The epic and the autobiography are the things where the main character never changes. You just keep hitting the same stuff over and over and over. And that's what this does for me. So if there's a theme, it is to sort of, I don't know if it's a theme. I think the goal is to capture the mindset of someone who would be an international terrorist. I know that sounds really broad and like I'm evading the answer, but I don't mean to be. I think that's a great attempt. It is at its core a work of, I'm going to use the word empathy, not sympathetic, but I think it's absolutely trying to portray, what that mindset is, whether or not this is based in real life. I'm not saying it's trying to tell us what Carlos the Jackal was. I think it's just trying to get at this mindset, and I think it does it.
Yeah, I think it does a good job
as
of
well as
what
any,
this
as
character
as well
is.
As anything other than, like, Battle of Algiers. That's, like, the only thing I can compare it to that does that.
So, Aaron, you?
Theme obviously is Carlos the Jackal, but also it takes a very hard look at life in the Cold War from the side that we don't usually see it from. We as Westerners, we think about the Western democracies. We think about what we felt and what we saw during the Cold War. And I think that I loved what Harry just said about empathetic without being sympathetic, because I think that this does a better job than maybe anything else I've seen at really humanizing someone without championing them. Which I know slips slightly into a future question, but that really has to be said for this theme question too, I think. Because I think that without such a strong POV character like Carlos, that you couldn't really see the eastern side of the conflict as well as you can with this.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe you could do like Gaddafi or someone else equally as involved, but that then lends itself directly to Israel and Palestine. That doesn't play into the entire geopolitical situation that was going on.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, there's been other stuff that involves some of the people that were tangentially involved with Carlos's group, like a little bit related to involved with the raid on Netanyahu, but like you said, that's pretty periphery. So now my next question is this. Just how good was Ramirez in this title role, Aaron?
Me?
Yeah.
How do you put it into the... he physically transforms within and like, just looking at it from, like, the dedication of the actor is incredible. But then again, like, this guy is kind of a monster, and the fact that you never hate him, the fact that you see him wrestling with his professed ideals versus the way he truly lives his life. The fact that you see him really trying to figure out if what's the line? He says that Marxism is his religion and Palestinian freedom is his cause. And Roger Ebert says, but we all know watching this that his religion and his cause was actually Carlos. And it's true. And at the same time, you never hate him for it because you see him struggling with the dichotomy of what he wants to be versus what he is. And Ramirez cannot, I don't think he can get enough praise for the performance he gave.
It's one of those subtle performances that you don't realize has as many shading as it does until you've seen it twice or more. So what about you, Perry?
I agree that you can't give him enough praise for the work here. And I'll go, this is interesting because I think Aaron and I are, I'm going to sound like I'm disagreeing with you, and I'm not. I think you're perfectly allowed to hate him. I don't think the movie's asking you not to hate him. The movie's judging. Like, you can come at it however you want. I don't want to say Assayas isn't. The work doesn't. But I think it's really easy to hate him. It doesn't mean he's not fascinating. It doesn't mean you want him to die instantly. But
that's a fair assessment.
Yeah. But what I find interesting is, I read back in that, I too read the Ebert review again, and I'm like, I don't see it as the film that I had. Okay, so this is, like I said, I hadn't seen this since the year it was out, and I literally just watched it again in the last month getting ready to do this. And there are two things that put me in mind of, and one of them I'll talk about a little later. But the only other movie that came to mind in the last 10 years that I thought kind of gets there. It's not the same movie, but it's close. It's another movie that's like history adjacent. And, the history is important, but it doesn't have to get the history right. It's just got to get the feelings right. And forgive me for going back to my favorite, but it's The Irishman. And I kept watching it this time around with thinking of, Assayas does exactly what De Niro would have done with the part. There's no difference. At no point is Assayas trying to make you like this character. He just does what he does. He's an incredibly one-note character, truth be told. He's not deep. There's not a lot. There isn't a lot of conflict there. It's watching somebody who espouses this complete and total belief in this sometimes not acting like it, and never really struggles with that with himself. And that's fascinating, and that's really hard to make compelling, especially over a long period like that, when you want the weight of a whole life, which is what both of those films pull off.
So, one of the questions that we prepped for was, does this seem to be biased for or against Carlos at all? And, for me, and we've gotten into that here, for me, I think it is remarkably even-handed. It presents the facts as we appear to know them. It tries to give what he professed or has professed are his reasons for what he'll admit to. then basically lets you watch this character. And it is a character. I mean, it's a real person, but it's also a character for the purpose of the film or the series, however you want to call it. And then just let you kind of draw your own opinions on whether the series is empathetic with him, if it's critical of him. And I think that the audience really puts a lot in there because, I've talked to different people about this, and some people say, oh, it's very sympathetic to him. Others will say, no, it's just very harsh.
You know, my reading is this guy is a pretty egotistical fellow, not a very pleasant guy, but I don't think the film ever shows him as the villain in his own story because, you know, he doesn't see himself as that. So it's a very even-handed portrayal. There's a remarkable level of empathy. I refuse to say sympathy, but there is a lot of empathy here. So, yeah. Now, Perry, what about you? How would you what do you have to say about this?
I think it's. I mean, let's put it this way. I think it's very telling that we want to call this work empathetic, and yet, you know, Carlos himself has said he has problems with it. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. You know, does it see him so clear-eyed and he can't look at himself, or is he? You know, I'd love to have it enumerated for me the ways in which he has problems with this. that would be fascinating to know. But I think that it doesn't let. Yeah, I think you nailed it. It is so. I don't even want to say empathetic. It's so non-judgmental. I don't think it's trying to. I don't think it's really trying to understand him emotionally. I think it's trying to put. Like I said, I think it has the very huge and yet still, you know, very simple objective of just trying to make you understand the mindset. And if you consider just being able to understand someone empathetic, then fine, it's empathetic. But I don't think it's asking you, you know, it's not asking for empathy to the point where you feel what Carlos feels. It just wants you to understand.
Right.
At the level that you want to understand it. And that's fantastic.
Yep. So what about you, Aaron?
I keep thinking about the little disclaimer at the start of each segment. This is a work of historical journalism, but it's also a film, basically. So portions that we do not know had to be filled in and are fictional. This is a work of fiction, though it tells a true story, basically. I think that's the most honest done a true story statement I've ever seen. I think that it works very well with the facts that we know. I think that it shows it as clear-eyed as it possibly can and asks the viewers to do with it what they want. I don't think it puts its thumb on the scale in either direction. And maybe Carlos is just getting to an age where seeing what he did is bothering him more than he ever thought it would. He doesn't necessarily strike me as a psychopath. So maybe the fact he was claiming to be a Marxist while being a terrorist for hire is coming home to roost, because those are diametrically opposed
points. I also think he's worried about his legal battles and whether the film will bias juries.
Yeah,
but you know that is possible. It's nice to imagine that he might have a conscience. So what about you, Perry?
Here's where, for the history for me, here's where this lands. Maybe the greatest compliment I've ever heard for a screenwriter and for a film comes from, I can't remember who it is, but the good Steve Jobs film, you know, not the one with Ashton Kutcher. Michael Stuhlbarg is in that movie.
The one with Fassbinder.
Real person. Exactly. I can't remember the character Michael Stuhlbarg plays. I don't remember the real guy. But the guy who he played was asked about the movie and said, and this is literally one of the greatest comments I've ever heard. He said, "None of that happened. All of it is true." And that's, you can't do better than that. Like, that's the point of fiction, right? That's what we're trying to do here, and that's exactly what Carlos does.
So now I will go to you again, Perry, and I will ask, how does this compare to other tellings of the story that you've heard or seen?
Well, remember, I'm measuring this up against In Search Of, so that's a high bar, all right? Let's get clear right now.
Oh, I know, a half-hour show 40 years ago. Awesome.
Here's how I'll answer that, because I don't know that I've ever watched another – there is no other work that is this, you know, about Carlos the Jackal. But here's what I'll say. I have a gigantic soft spot in my heart and in my brain and in my movie-watching love, and I have since I was a kid, hostage situation. I think they are perfect storytelling mechanisms. You can tell all kinds of different stories with a hostage situation. And I think that this one does it. This one tells a geopolitical hostage situation story better than anything ever. I truly have nothing to compare it to in giving me a sense of the global ramifications of doing something and how it would actually look and what the interplay would be between the abductors and the abductees. And, you know, it's amazing to watch, you know, someone demand a plane and get it. This was a common occurrence in the late 70s. It doesn't really happen anymore. And so I, you know, almost as, again, Jenny, you guys talk about it as history, it's valuable just for that to understand. So, yes, I forget the original question, but for all of those reasons, yes, I think it is one of the greatest hostage stories ever told, and there's more than one throughout, which is what makes it really great for me as someone who just loves this situation.
Well, you know, it's interesting you mentioned the hostage stuff because, you know, probably this is the best thing put on film for that sort of material. Otherwise, you have to go to novels or works of absolute nonfiction that tell about other hostage situations in order to come anywhere close to what this does when it comes to that. Now, you know, there are, of course, different sorts of hostage situations.
Absolutely.
And, but in terms of a very realistic one and something based in real events, no, this is hard to beat. So what about you, Aaron?
So most of my meanderings through the life of Carlos the Jackal have been reading. I've never watched a documentary or anything about him. So this is really it as far as that goes. I just have a hard time believing that anything would be better. It has all of the main historical points. And as Perry said, there's constant hostage taking, and one of them involves flying a plane from Hungary to Africa and then basically running out of fuel and it's done with the utmost suspense. This thing is 5.5-6 hours long, and there's a few parts that drag, but for the most part, it is constant kinetic filmmaking at the height of suspense. And that sequence with OPEC and then the airplane hostage release is just, this is what happens when you talk all week for a living. He's the resistance. Thank you. I'll be here all week. The whole, it's three episodes. It builds up to that. And then after that, his life basically collapses. And we watch everything catching up to him. And so, like, it is literally the centerpiece of this piece of art. And they didn't miss.
So, you know, this goes into everything that we've said, but I think it bears a little bit more digging. So is this good history then, Aaron?
How do you define good history?
To me?
Where there is, in terms of good history, history that at least attempts to, especially as it pertains to fictional presentation, to a dramatization, I'll say, does it get the history right? Does it get, you know, is there enough truth, or are they changing things that they ought not to have changed? Is this history that respects the known facts of the case rather than changing things just to tell a story?
I think that this is definitely a case where it leans heavily into the facts as we know them. And that the fiction is always in service of the truth, not in service of the story. It just happens that the story is compelling enough that leaning into the truth works for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that the story can take a backseat, so to speak, to the history and still be a compelling story to watch.
Yeah. So, Perry, what about you?
Yeah, with the caveat you put on it, yes, absolutely. With that qualification, it's great history. I have no idea if it's all factual, and I don't really care.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like you said, it's the greatest based on a true story explanation ever. We researched historically and dug through the record, and yet we entirely made up his relations with everybody. I mean, what more could you ask for of an out? So, and like we said, all of it works in service of what I think, and I'll go this far. I think that, there are those films where you can tell the filmmaker is figuring it out as they go on. They've got a question they need to answer. And then there are some where it's like they know what they want to say. And this feels more like the latter to me. And what
mm-hmm.
Chase wants to say is not heavily weighted. It's not something he's like trying to convince you need to know. But I think he had a particular understanding of what his Carlos's mindset was, and he was going to show it over and over and over and over, and does it in a way that I keep watching almost all of it. There's about an hour this you could lose, and I don't think it would hurt anything. As great as the first 75 minutes of that part two is, the next 30 are a chore to get to that ending where we meet the wife, the late wife.
Yeah.
I my mind just breaks down. It, that first part is so good, and it feels like such, the wind just leaves the sails. And I beg, it's that point where I always wish that this was a two-hour movie or two and a half. But that said, this is fabulous history. I have no idea if it's true, but it's fabulous history.
Yeah, no, I think that last half hour or so definitely drags. And as important as the first maybe 20 minutes or so of the third part are, oh, boy, that's a little bit of a slog, too. So there's definitely about 50-60 minutes in there that are not very compelling. But that brings me to our next question, and that is one specific to the director. So where does this fit or rank for you with Osiris's other works, Perry?
As I said, I am hit or miss on Asaeus. It's my favorite thing that I've seen is Clouds of Sils Maria, but I have an incredible soft spot for stories about actors. So I think that he's playing into my wheelhouse with that one, and I think it's brilliant. Here's where I will here's where I found it most interesting in a way I didn't the first time, because I didn't go in with this frame on it. The first 10 minutes, maybe not even 10, of the whole thing, that first car bombing, right? We all know what I'm talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you watch that sequence, it is the greatest tribute / knockoff, and I'm not making fun of, not insulting. It's the greatest Godard knockoff I've ever seen. I didn't realize it when I first watched it, or I didn't remember it. And I love the idea that this is a French director just sort of planting the flag. Look, I could do this like Godard. I could make this incredibly political film like Godard would, but I'm not going to. This is something else now. And I loved that. Like, that kind of gave me chills as I was watching this going, this is so deliberate. It's so smart. It's such a great way to announce, you know, it without being really obvious. It's not showy. It's just, this is my intention. This is what I'm doing, which is exactly what all the 6 hours is. It's not showy, as incredibly impressive. I mean, he had every right to take as many as he wants showing off during it, but he doesn't, because he knows what he's doing. I really love that about the opening of the film.
What about you, Aaron?
This is my favorite. I do like the way he does the smaller films. I think that he's just masterful. Irma Vep is also absolutely brilliant. His knowledge of cinema history is encyclopedic. He's one of the film nerd filmmakers. The Godard both tribute / middle finger toward there at the start of the whole thing is absolutely brilliant. I had thoughts on Godard, which I'll bring up in a future show very soon, the other day. Anyway, this is my favorite, and it's because he gets to do so much. And he is never showy, but he's never fully restrained either.
He will definitely
be told the way that the story needs to be told, which is dynamic. It's very kinetic, as I've mentioned. It's just such a rush most of the time. But if you can watch anything that's split up into 3.5 to 2 hour segments and never has a point where it lags, tell me where it's at. because it's hard. It's hard to basically make a miniseries out of 3 feature-length films and then make it into one story. Because when you watch a miniseries, your instinct is to cut it off at the hour mark, because that's what television's used to. And that is one of those
lost my train of thought there.
It happens. So my
original point, however,
Carlos
is
blew up your train of thought. I get it. Okay.
So my next question is going to be to you, Aaron, and that is, where does this ultimately rank amongst TV programs for you?
if it's not in my top 30, it's really like knocking on the door. I agree. There's maybe 30 to 50 minutes that could have been cut, but I don't care. None of the things that nag at me bother me as much as what I love about it. It's just so fresh. It came out 12 years ago at this point, and it feels more fresh now, I think, than it did when I saw it in 2013, which was only 3 years after it came out. And I think that says something remarkable about the achievement.
Yeah. So my next question then, or the same question, will be posed to Perry. So what about you? How do you rank it? Where do you rank it amongst TV programs?
I'm going to get out of this. I don't think it's a TV program. Based on the conversation that we had the last time I was fortunate enough to be invited on the show and our TV discussion, this doesn't fit that definition. This is a movie. It is supposed to be taken in one sitting. It's broken up into 3 2-hour chunks because that's how we're supposed to consume it, because nobody wants to sit in a theater for 6 hours. But I don't believe we're supposed to, like, I think they just stopped because those were good points to stop. So we have three sort of evenly distributed episodes, he says in air quotes. It's not TV, so it's better than any TV for the most part. It's certainly more interesting. It beats the whole.
Anything reality TV. Certainly, it's better than many other miniseries.
Just because, like I said, I don't think the goal is television.
I refuse to ghettoize TV just because of. Fucking Real Housewives or Snoop Minnow.
Yes, absolutely. But all I mean is that, you know, it is not cut. It's not made for you to stop every 15 minutes for an ad. The content-wise, there's nothing there that's restricted. You know, there's nothing, you know. We see a lot of Carlos throughout this movie. It does not feel like TV. At all to me. It feels like a movie. And so I have a hard time. It doesn't seem fair to anything else to compare.
Well, this is another thing where I will say this is another reason why I typically prefer old cable or streaming to network shows. You know, that's why it gives me The Wire over even something like, or The Sopranos, even over something as great as Breaking Bad or Mad Men. But that said, I have it ranked 107 out of 300 programs on my list. It may deserve to be a little higher, maybe 105, maybe a little lower, 110. But, you know, for me, it's one that I probably appreciate it more than I actually love it, but there's no denying that this is an achievement. You know, whether you consider it a movie or a TV program, is absolutely a quality piece of work, and you should be seen. So before we get into the rest of our discussion, whatever that may end up being, because I have a feeling we're wrapping it up here, I want to do our housekeeping. And that is to say that on the 14th, which is tomorrow, Down the Rabbit Hole with Rachel will be back, and it is an episode called From Band to Solo. What could that be? Then, Rock This Town Radio with TC in an episode called Party Time is happening on the 15th. And
This show, Cathode Ray Emission, will be back next Friday with an episode I'm calling Coen Brothers Redux. That's because nearly 2 years ago, we did an episode on the Coen Brothers. At the time, we didn't know that that was probably going to be the last episode of their, or I guess I apologize a little bit, the last work they were going to do together as a team. Now we have good evidence that that's the case. And there's been some fine scholarship released in the last couple of years, and we'll get to that. So in 2 weeks, next week, we will be doing that episode. And it's going to be fun. I'm fully expecting a great, great one. So did you still want it in that one, Perry, the Coen Brothers one, or are you absolutely still unavailable next week?
Oh, God, I will get back to you. I have to think. My whole schedule has been thrown around in the last 2 weeks for personal stuff. So I don't.
Hey,
let me get back to you.
Shit happens. Yep. And,
let me get back to you.
Now, that's fine. So the 2 weeks thing is because I was going to say, not on the 27th, on the 27th, but rather on the 3rd of June, so 2 weeks after our Coen Brothers episode next week, we will be back with an episode on the miniseries Band of Brothers. Again, that will be on June 3rd. We will eventually be doing an episode on the Pacific, but for purposes of the show, we will be separating discussion of the two for now. So that is our housekeeping. And now I will do what I always do, and I'll take it to you, Aaron. Is there anything that we haven't touched on for Carlos that you'd like to touch on before we go?
Oh, is there... No, I don't think at the moment I can think of anything.
And what about you, Perry? Anything?
I'll throw a couple other things out there. Just because the way I'm wired, I cannot let a conversation in which somebody mentions that this might be the greatest hostage story movie ever made based on real events without saying, I love it, but I'll still take Dog Day Afternoon over this. And that's personal. If you like this better, I get it. It's way more global in implication. I understand the appeal. This is not a knock on Carlos. If you know me, for me to say this, you understand how great Carlos is. If I say, it's almost as good as Dog Day Afternoon, that's saying something for me. And I will say the other interesting film that I thought about while watching it now, 12 years later, that has come in the interim, at least I think it came in the interim. It must have. An interesting case study, and at 4 hours, something that feels longer than Carlos's 6 hours, is Steven Soderbergh's Shay, which I like. That's a film I truly admire and don't love. I think he does a lot in that 4 hours that I know he's talked about it, and you can tell from watching it, he's talking about how he was lost making it and realized he didn't want to be doing this. And you can feel that in the movie. And at the same time, there are a whole lot of really interesting connections. Like, those are two different movies. Those aren't – I mean, you can see them in one, but there are two absolutely different tones where I think this Carlos is pretty much
is
the
one,
same for 6 hours. You know, he's not playing with film language to make you – you know, to delineate that you're in a different time and space of Carlos's life as well as, or as much as Soderbergh does, not as well as, because he's not trying to do it. And I think this, Che's a very good film. Che's a good film. Obviously, it's a very good film. But it is a very interesting film to watch in relation to this film. And it also shows why, like you were saying, why this is a much better telling of any story like this than has been done anywhere else.
Che actually came out before Carlos.
Did it really?
For whatever
that. Wow.
Yeah. And I will say that Part One is a truly great film. The Cuba story is amazing. The Bolivia story, he you're right. He never fully puts it together.
It's still got good stuff in it. Problem for me with Soderbergh. I don't think Soderbergh's ever figured out how to tell be consistent in telling a conclusion, in giving a conclusion. Now, that's not to say that he hasn't made films or done shows where there's been a good ending, but I think he's often struggled with how to wrap things up.
Mm. Oh, I can't wait till we get to do a Soderbergh episode. I want to do one
but that may just be me being pissed at one or two of his movies, you know. And who knows, when I finally get to it, and we are indeed going to do a Soderbergh episode in the future, next year. Shh, don't tell anyone.
I won't.
You know, one of the things I want to do is run through all his movies, because it's been a while since I've done that.
I love the man. I cannot wait to do this. I think he's the most. He's one of the directors I can talk about the most. I think he's fascinating.
Well, I still think that his most interesting work may be The Knit.
I understand why you say that. I don't agree with you. I mean, I'm saying it's interesting. I don't think it's his most interesting. But, yeah, I want to have this conversation. I'm intrigued. Soderbergh's one of those few directors who I actually am always interested in what other people think of particular works.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and, look, I don't want to say that I think he's bad. I mean, look, I think Kubrick has major issues, but I still consider him one of the greats, and there's no way, shape, or form that I would not call Soderbergh one of the current giants in cinema. But I still think he has some issues, some spots that I think are interesting to discuss. Esaias. But you know, we can always get to that in another episode. Honestly, you know, it was brought up earlier. The Esaias that I think is the best movie he's made is Carlos. The one that I might have had the most fun with is Irma Vep. Irma Vep is just a really, really fucking fantastic little bit of filmmaking.
It really is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I honestly only got to see Irma Vep about 2 years ago, which, you know, I was blown away by it. I was thinking it was going to be a very good movie. I wasn't expecting to see a truly great film, and it took me very pleasantly by surprise. That's always great when that happens, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, that said, I wish Hugh could have been here. Hope everything's okay with him. So, you know, we'll have to see how that goes. But we wish you could have made it, Hugh. Too bad you weren't here. But, yes, fellows, thank you guys for coming. Thank everyone else out there for listening in. And, you know, I thought this was going to be a fairly short episode. And it is, because I think that we're done. So on the count of three, we can say goodnight.
One, two, three, goodnight.
Good night.
Why am I putting this bag over my head?
Bye-bye.